Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Weekly Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast, where we'll be having a look at the cost of black grass to tillage farms and hearing about the impact that depression can have on a family. But before that, my colleague Phelim O'Neill spoke to Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Martin Hayden, about Irish access to the South Korean beef market. Now, South Korea is of course famous for their pop band BTS, like you don't know who I'm talking about, and of all things, wasabi-flavoured Kit Kats. But more importantly for Irish farmers, it is also one of the biggest beef importers in the world.
Minister Hayden, thank you very much for speaking to the Irish Farmers Journal. We've recently seen huge progress made in opening the South Korean market for Irish beef. When it comes through, it'll join China, although it's in suspension at the moment, and Japan. When do you see the first Irish beef going to South Korea?
So I wouldn't like to second guess the process that is underway now in the National Assembly of the Korean system. So basically, we've gone through five stages of an eight-stage process. And this stage now moves to the political stage, where the technical work by my officials in the Department of Agriculture have now concluded. The Ministry of Agriculture in South Korea have published, as you've reported previously, have published a public consultation for 20 days, and it then moves into the National Assembly for its consideration by its politicians and its political system. That is a process where we expect to be done jointly with France, with French beef. And it is a process that we suspect could take in around the 6 month mark.
The likelihood is it'll probably be 2022 when you wave off the first shipment of Irish beef.
Yes, because this is stage five and there still is stage six and seven to follow. And that would involve the inspection and approval of Irish meat plants. So should the National Assembly, which we very much hope they will, approve access of Irish beef, that technical work does have to happen thereafter. So, you know, my officials are working really, really hard here. We appointed an agricultural attaché, which is effectively a full-time member of my department working and based in Seoul and working in Korea on this. And that has definitely helped to move things on. And it's a top priority for me as a minister.
Okay. So it remains in the pipeline. One that we thought we had and we're doing good business with that has disappeared off our radar for now almost 12 months at this stage, China. What's going on there, Minister? Can you tell us?
So as you'll know, and as your readers will know, we had an atypical BSE case, which happens occasionally and doesn't in any way affect our status. That was last May. And on the foot of that, in line with our protocols with the Chinese, we stopped our exporting of beef to China and have engaged with them ever since, answering any of the questions they have, doing all the due diligence that was required there. We feel we've everything done on our side, and we've had extensive diplomatic engagement, as well as my officials with the General Agricultural Affairs Committee in China, the GAC.
The ball's very much in the Chinese court at the minute.
It is very much so, and I've had a recent meeting along with Minister McConnell with the Ambassador He, the Chinese ambassador here in Ireland, where again we've pushed our eagerness to get back beef access into China, because, you know, we have our plants here approved for that. We are ready to go. And there is a demand from those Chinese consumers that we're very much enjoying access.
So you're just basically like all the readers of the Farmers Journal then, Minister, you're just waiting here. There's nothing more you can do at this stage.
Well, my officials and I are working very closely. I've planned a trade mission, all going well with COVID. And obviously we've been restricted in our travel because of COVID. I'm planning a trade mission to China for November, which again, where I will bring with me a lot of, all going well, a lot of Irish companies to open access and increase further access there. And obviously beef will be a key part of that. Okay. We very much hope to have access back by that time. But this is a matter for the Chinese authorities. We stand ready to answer any further questions they have.
We'll wait and hope then is the answer there. Minister, the week that's in it, we've had the launch of the 2030 strategy. Again, looking at this through the farmer lens, great strategy for the environment, a great strategy for climate, etc. Not much mention for farms or farm incomes. It looks like farmers will have to pick up the tab for this and hope that the market might deliver something in return, but no guarantees.
Well, I disagree with you on the point that not much mention of farmers, so that I'd say there's more of a focus on the primary producer in this strategy than
what they can do, that is.
In its predecessors, in Food Harvest and Foodwise, and that was something that I was very keen on. As a minister with special responsibility for farm safety and farmer well-being, I think a more of a focus in this strategy was absolutely critical, and it's something I would have made a point to Tom Arnold and members of the stakeholders group. And I very much welcome that you know, the viable and resilient primary producers with enhanced well-being is integral to this here. And talking about sustainability in the round, in a holistic approach, not just the environmental sustainability and the sustainability of our society here in rural Ireland, but also the economic sustainability for the family farm and for the primary producer. And that, you know, when we talk about better and more sustainably produced food in a food system, a sustainable food system, which is the right approach, to recognize that does mean either a loss of production or increasing costs for the primary producers, and that has to be met. And that's why we have a number of measures in here that we look to drive through in our strategy, you know, and rolling out the producer organizations on a wider footing, rebalancing the role of the primary producer and the farmer in that supply chain, and strengthening their hand from a position of being price takers at present, and also looking to increase the value of markets, which is obviously a key part for me as well.
Minister, realistically, how can that happen? You know, at the end of the day, the farmers, we've never had more farm organisations than we have at present. We cannot get collective negotiation at that level. And we have a huge industry. You know, for example, one thing that could be done very quickly to bring complete transparency to the chain at the processing end. Would you commit to bringing and driving transparency at what happens beyond the farm gate when it comes to the meat industry in this country?
Absolutely, completely. And it's a key part of our programme for government. This government is determined to do that. We will enact the EU directive on unfair trading practices very soon. And we also are bringing forward legislation on the establishment of the Food Ombudsman that will bring about that level of transparency that is critical, particularly on the beef side. And into our food supply systems, and we need that transparency to shine a light so that farmers know exactly where our challenges are here, because a lot of this is a lack of information for us, and a lot of the problems we've seen for primary producers in the past and frustration that has built up. And I say this as somebody who's been a beef farmer all my life myself, here in South Kildare, that, you know, a lot of that frustration has built up because of that lack of transparency, and I'm determined this government will open up the transparency in the sector.
Minister Hayden, thank you very much for your time.
And Phelan will have more on that in this week's paper. Now, mental health is spoken about much more openly these days, and in the context of a global pandemic, it has never been as important. Anna Donoghue spoke to Claire Ford, a counsellor from County Kerry, about depression, supports for depression sufferers' families, domestic abuse and self-care.
Just to start, Claire, in terms of these issues, would you have come across this much before in your work?
Well, I've come across it actually generally in life. So farming would be sort of part of my own life until the early noughties. And so I would have come across a lot of it being part of, we'll say, the farming community myself. And yeah, certainly a little bit in work. And also, of course, it's at various times that I have replied to problems, you know, there with yourselves. So I think carers are very often forgotten about, and not in a bad way, but I think what happens is when somebody, so we're focusing specifically on farming life and farm families today, but obviously we're aware that depression and different things we'll be talking about can go right across the board in all kinds of you know, places. But as I said, we're focusing on farming. So farming is obviously very, you're living in the rural part of the country. And in the countryside, people can be very private, you know. And in the case of depression or other mental unwellness, when somebody in the house is, shall we say, struck down with it or gets it, it's often kept a secret. Okay, because we don't want the neighbors to know. I think there's a fear, the stigma, unfortunately, is still there attached to mental health issues. And it just saddens me greatly that it is, because it delays recovery.
You mentioned earlier there, Claire, just when you were, I suppose, first discussing this issue, you said that this lady was a carer, and that actually has really stayed with me, because I would never have thought of her as a carer. That comes back into the recognizing mental and physical health kind of, she, I suppose she is a carer in the times when her husband is feeling very bad.
She unofficially she's a carer, you know what I'm saying? And this goes on a lot, like you're an unofficial carer, I suppose, really. And because you're there, you know, and I mean, it happens vice versa as well, I'm sure, but you know, it's just, it was a lady that wrote in with this particular issue, so I'm just sort of referring to her, maybe, like, she is unofficially a carer as well as being a spouse and a mother and so on and so forth, you know. So so yes, I feel she and so many other people can be very, very much taken for granted. And as I also said there to start, you know, I believe the stigma that is still out there and attached to mental health and mental illness, it prevents a lot of people from reaching out for help sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and that's a very valid point, that because you've named out a lot of supports there. As you said, maybe there might be a bit more pushing forward in the advertisement, but there are supports there for, you know, families of people who have depression. But I suppose maybe we're not as aware of them because of stigmas, and because, like, that it's not like you've you know, you're after hurting your leg and you'd say it to anybody, kind of. It's something that you might keep very privately.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know from my work that the stigma is very much there right across the board. It doesn't matter what age you are, you know. People just, like, would say, where I would be based, you know, that the buildings are very much, if a person was seen going in the door of the particular buildings I work from, you know, people wouldn't even assume they might be going for counselling. They could be going for other, you know, different kind of treatments as well. They could be going to see their different businesses, you know, in the same building. And they really appreciate this because, again, just don't want people to think that, you know, they might be experiencing mental health issues, you know. And I think it's just so important to, we need to do more to just release that stigma. I think even would say the soaps on TV, they need to bring it in more, and we need to normalize that mental health issues arise just as regularly as physical health issues, and it's nothing to be ashamed about. And the person who, you know, will go and say, look, I am feeling unwell, I don't know, is it anxiety, is it depression, is it something else, but I need help, you know, they're showing fierce courage, and it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help, I suppose is what I'm trying to say here.
And there with that report, and the full interview is online if you want to hear more. Stay tuned, because we'll be back after this.
Sweeping changes for Irish farming in the next 10 years. For more in your Farmer's Journal, here's Paul Mooney.
Our specialists analyse the agri-food strategy and what it means for your farm. Farmers on peatlands fear new rules will put cap money in jeopardy. We have all the details on the REPS 2 scheme, and beef trade hits another gear with prime cattle heading for €4.50 per kilo.
Plus, sheep farmers to reinvest as good prices drive optimism. Only inside this week's Irish Farmers Journal, on sale now.
Blackgrass is still a major issue for the tillage industry in Ireland. Stephen Robb spoke with Andy Doyle about the cost of not controlling blackgrass in Ireland's tillage fields.
And our war on blackgrass continues this week. We have the fourth article of our blackgrass campaign appearing in the paper this week from yourself. And it's around the costs of having blackgrass. So I suppose to begin with, Andy, what exactly do you mean by the costs of having blackgrass? Are you just talking about the cost of the chemistry or the cost of roguing it? Or what exactly do you mean?
Stephen, I think the cost of having blackgrass is the same as that of having any other weed, but this is a notoriously more difficult one, and it's a notoriously more damaging one. So the cost associated with it, yes, certainly includes the chemistry, the various herbicides that people might use, and Chagos would put a relatively basic cost of trying to tackle weeds in the field at about 150 euro a hectare. Which is, you know, not insignificant in terms of an extra expenditure over and above all the other problems that we have to deal with in the field. But it's not just that. If you let a problem get very bad before it was addressed, or even maybe even identified, well, then, you know, the first course of action you may ever take would be a destruction of a piece of a crop or a field or a crop. And that gets a lot more expensive, because at that point, when you know you have this really big problem that you have to address, you've already probably spent the bones of 1,300 euro a hectare producing that field.
Yeah, so in a sense, in a really bad scenario whereby you have to take out a crop, you have to factor in the cost of getting the crop to the stage where you have to destroy it. And also the income foregone, I suppose, from the actual harvesting and sale of that crop. So that all factors into the cost of pretty much ignoring this weed, doesn't it?
Yes, and you know, if you ignore it, it will just multiply and spread. That they are the only two things that happen. And bit by bit, they eat into yield of the crop, and then bit by bit, they eat into an even bigger set of costs that you must undergo in the long term. You know, if you end up with a field that has to be destroyed or a piece of it, then, you know, you really have no great business growing a crop in that field again next year. That land has to be destined for grass, and how you do that sum depends on what overall enterprises are on any individual farm. But even if it's a lesser problem, there are other costs that have to be undergone on an annual basis there afterwards. The cost of stubble cultivation to try and grow the weed out of the ground, the cost of the herbicide will be recurring. The inevitable yield loss that would be associated with any significant quantity of weeds in the field at all. The absolute need to rogue following herbicide use, because you might not get 100% kill a lot of the time. And if you don't rogue, you may very well be witnessing the beginning of the development of resistance, because you don't know whether the plant that survived was just not adequately killed, or whether it is actually becoming resistant and you have a resistant population beginning to build. So there are a huge number of things that happen in there. One of the other things that people would do nowadays would be switching to Mintil, or in and out of Mintil probably is the best way to say it, moving to spring crops, which could for many farmers result in lesser yield and lesser profit. Not always, it's fair to say, but it can do. And then when you are planting crops in there, it's generally advised to put in slightly more seed in the ground, or grow varieties that are known to be slightly more aggressive towards the growth of blackgrass in the field, to try and help subdue the product, to help subdue the weed, and to help the products that would subsequently be applied to try and control it.
Yeah, so really what I'm hearing here is there's a whole range of hidden costs associated with controlling blackgrass after it becomes a problem. So I suppose the simplest solution here, Andy, is don't let it become a problem.
There is no doubt in my mind, Stephen, that, you know, the vigilance that it takes to keep the weed out is going to be the best time, effort and money ever spent on a tillage farm. For many years, we had known of this serious problem in the UK, but it had not been a problem in Ireland to any great degree. It has been in Ireland, we must say, since going back about the 1970s, when it came in with imported seed from the UK back then. So, you know, the people who go after it. The people who see one or two plants because they're watching their fields, driving their sprayers, or because they're walking them regularly, and pull those couple of plants. That little effort on that first occasion is just such good value for money, time and effort. Zero tolerance is the only way that tillage farmers can win against blackgrass, and I would argue against any of the grass weeds.
Andy, look, we're going to wrap it up there. I think that's a pretty strong message to end on, and I hope all of our listeners pay attention to it. Andy, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Stephen.
And that was Stephen Robb and Andy Doyle from our tillage team. Well, that's it for this week. I'm Hannah Quinn-Mulligan, and the sound engineer was Jerome Dunn. Thanks very much for tuning in.
The Irish Farmers Journal podcast, online at farmersjournal.ie and on iTunes and Spotify every Wednesday.